He turns. He fires for the win. He's got the bucket at the buzzer.
Weber back to Bibby. Has the open shot.
Ladies and gentlemen, up on those feet. Put those hands together. And we'll meet tonight starting five for your Sacramento Kings.
Welcome to the Kings Beat Podcast. I am James Hamm, Kings Insider for ESPN 1320 and the Kings Beat. Joining me today, Box 40's Sean Cunningham. How are you, Sean?
I'm great. Could be better, but busy Friday ahead, and good to see your smiling faces.
Look at that. Yeah. And of course, we are joined by Brendan Nunes from the Kings Pulse Podcast. Brendan, how are you?
Doing well. Nothing too special. Believe it or not, I have been on a scary movie kick recently.
It's Brendan wild. Is becoming a cinephile. It's really... Yeah,
never heard that word.
It's okay. It's a clean one.
I went to...
Doesn't sound clean.
No, it does not. I went to the Cinemark in Doko for the first time. It's a nice theater. I don't think I've been to a movie theater in a long time. I guess I saw Barbie in theaters, but prior to that, it'd been years, probably.
Decent experience. I like that one. It is cool. The seats lay back pretty well.
Yeah.
It's all electric, and there's also a ton of space between you and the people in front of you. I don't know. I'm down. I like it. I have a tendency on occasion to, if I go to shoot around and then I've got a bunch of time to kill, I'll go catch a movie during the middle of the day before we start back up at 4 o'clock. So that's usually my theater of choice.
I didn't even know that one existed. I always assumed it was the one on the other end of K Street.
The Esquire.
Sure.
Okay.
Probably. That's the IMAX.
That's IMAX. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's also the Crest, which is in the middle. So right. Crest plays old.
How about Brendan just going, sure, as if dismissal, man, get to know your city here. What's wrong with you?
I'm directionally challenged. It's a.
Oh, yeah, I know this.
Takes a lot of effort. Yeah, I know you do.
There's other challenges. I'll tell you what.
Oh yeah.
That's funny.
You ever seen the way the guy eats a hot dog?
Calm down. We all got our glizzy habits. Okay.
What a treat.
That's funny.
I'm not the worst in the room, at least. Okay.
About that? Well, I don't know.
Not between us three, but in the media room.
Yeah,
there's some people that save me from getting too much ridicule. So
yeah, there are some people that that save you. All right, let's just get to the business side. If you're watching here on YouTube, give us a thumbs up if you don't mind. Become a subscriber here on the channel. All of that is awesome. Go to thekingsbeat.com and become a premium subscriber so you get access to all of our content here in the Kings Beat. Let's see, what else is there? We should have happy hour coming up. I will wrangle a guest maybe for next Thursday. Let me figure that one out.
Didn't we just do one?
It feels like we just had one, but we didn't just have one. It's been a while now. When we had Mr. Jim Crandall, that's at least 3 weeks ago.
Is this one going to be live in person someplace at some bar establishment or otherwise?
No, but I'm going to work on that because
you've been saying that.
Our friend Jim Graves sent me a really good idea, and I've got to do some research and reach out to some people. But there's a possibility that maybe we will do something larger scale, and do a live thing. So those things are all in the works. But in order to get invited to any of that, you got to become a premium subscriber of the Kings Beat. Also, wherever you're listening to your podcast, if you're not watching here on YouTube, if you don't mind, give us a rating and review. Those things help us. They help the algorithm of life. It's been a little bit quiet, but we do have some news. Sean and I spent a long time covering this team, and part of those years included the 2016 NBA draft, where the Sacramento Kings traded the 9th overall pick for pick number 13, pick number 28, and a second round pick and the draft rights to Bogdan Bogdanovic. Marquise Chris went number 9. Number 13 was Yorgos Papayannis. And number 28 just happened to be Scal Labissiere. Scal, of course, is from Haiti. His life story is absolutely incredible. And then we got to cover him for a couple of years. And one of the nicest kids that you're ever going to run into. And he just happens to be back with the Sacramento Kings. It's a weird deal. The Kings are basically trading for his G League rights from the Mexico City Capitanes and then signing him to an Exhibit 10 contract where he will compete for a roster spot. But realistically, this is a move to bolster the G League team, the Stockton Kings. And I don't know, like the deal in itself, well, let's start with Brendan because you've seen Scal Labissiere play, I assume. But is there anything that you think that where this can actually help this team? We'll get to Sean in a second because Sean actually got to sit down and chat with him, and we'll discuss that afterwards.
Yeah, it's hard to really know from Sacramento's perspective. You know, it's been myself educating myself on Scal since the signing, I will admit. Haven't seen him much. I think we did actually get to watch him in Golden 1 Center when Stockton played their last game in Golden 1 Center. It was against Mexico City and Scal Labissiere. So saw him in person that day. But yeah, just trying to, you know, get more familiar when it comes to Stockton's roster standpoint. Like Chance Comanche was still on that summer league team. So I would think there's a decent chance maybe that will translate over to Stockton. But after that, you know, there wasn't many bigs, and we'll see what happens with Nemias Keita. So maybe that is where this fits. But from a Sacramento perspective, it's kind of hard to figure out, right? The 4-5 is certainly where there's the biggest logjam. And my impression is that's where Scal falls into. And yeah, it's hard to figure out exactly where he would fit in Sacramento's roster, but they want some competition here and training camp deals. So we'll see. But I think from Stockton's roster building perspective, it makes sense to go try figure out some more forwards bigs.
Yeah. Sean, like covering Scal, we get to see the development of him. But I thought when he came out of Kentucky, he was really soft. And I remember like Big Bob Thornton on Dave Yeager's staff would literally just beat on Scal with like a big arm pad. And they're trying to work with him on, you know, being more physical in the post and like how to take a hit. And to be honest with you, a lot of that stuff I thought was probably going the wrong direction with Scal. I think Scal probably, because they did the same thing with Marvin Bagley. I think if you would have like more centered on him being a perimeter big and worked from that angle that, you know, you certainly needed him to be more physical, but at the same time, like some guys are just finesse players. And it is what it is. I mean, Scala is one of the prettiest jump shots you'll see from the 6'10", 6'11" guy. You know, he does have talent, but at 27 years old, he's kind of getting it, trying to fight back into the league after playing in Puerto Rico and playing in the G League a couple of times. I don't know. What were your initial thoughts, Sean, when you heard that Scala was coming back?
I was absolutely rather shocked. Because I thought basketball had pretty much been in the rearview mirror for him. And I think a lot of that, you talked about, you know, some of the things that they were working on when he was here. I mean, he'd be almost the poster child for when Dave Yeager talked about, I've got a lot of nice guys. Because he is. This guy, every time you see him, has a smile on his face. He's been through some absolute adversity in his life. I mean, coming out of Haiti, surviving the earthquake out there, and kind of growing up in the Memphis area a little bit. He's been through some shit. So every day is kind of a blessing for him as a man of faith. And so I think it was when he kind of charts his journey, if you will, in that interview. And as you laid out some of the stops he made, it was literally like going to Portland, suffering a pretty significant injury, getting cut or getting traded to Atlanta and then never really playing there. Atlanta cuts him. And so he toils in the G League. And as you mentioned, Puerto Rico, and he didn't play a lot with Mexico City, but it's kind of ironic that two of the games that he did play happened to be against the Stockton Kings. So they got a pretty good look at him. And in talking to him, I was very surprised how candid he was. And for the record, he and I had a really good relationship when he was here. Like that guy waxed me in NBA 2K one time in Vegas and just absolutely destroyed me. And I was like, why can't you be like that guy? Be mean, be talk shit, like be that guy. He's a lot of fun. He really is. And we did a few stories together when he was here. And I thought one of the biggest things about as a player was, aside from him being a little too nice and a little soft or a finesse player, which is okay, because honestly, like De'Aaron Fox describes himself as a finesse player. But I think that De'Aaron has found a competitive edge, and Scal didn't really get that. And when he talks about in that interview about how he's different, like he says, the Scal, you know, back when I was a member of the Kings is not the Scal I am today. He's been through some things. He's a little bit more hardened, if you will. And he talks about his maturity both on the court and off the court. So I'm not totally confident that that's going to translate into overall success for him, but good for him for getting an opportunity. And as you mentioned, James, like, yeah, this, I think the Kings look at this as a way to strengthen the G League team for sure. But Scal isn't looking at it that way. He's like, no, I've got an opportunity, and I've made the Kings before, or I've been on the Kings before. I've been through training camps. Granted, it wasn't with this management or this coaching staff, but he throws that out the window. He's like, I've got an opportunity to make an NBA roster. And if that NBA, if it comes with me, much like, how KZ Okpala and mainly Chima Maneki last year was, where they spent some time in the G League, but overall still made the opening day roster. I think that's kind of what he's envisioning for himself. And when you look at it, being, so many bigs and trying to find these answers, and some of them provide different things. You've got somebody like Nemias Keita, you've got Nerlens Noel, you've got himself now, you've got Trey Lyles, who obviously has a roster spot and offers something a little bit different. I would, Scal offers some things that are a little bit different. He can extend the floor, he can block shots. Not a great rebounder, and he should be. And I think that's where some of the frustrations lie. And if he's gotten away from some of those mechanical movements and become more of a fluid player and a little bit more of a quicker player, that might translate somewhere. So good for him for taking the opportunity and hopefully looking forward to competition against a bunch of guys that he's already familiar with their games. I mean, you got five dudes from Kentucky now, and two of them you're going to be kind of competing against. And, I also think, we had the Nemias Keita discussion just a few weeks ago, and I was a little blunt in the way I said this, but I think the organization looks at it as his next step and his progression. And it's like, okay, well, if you can't beat out a guy like Nerlens Noel, or you can't beat out Scal Labissiere, well, then you have no business being in the league, right? So I think it just provides some really healthy camp competition. And, if you don't make the opening day roster, there's probably a fallback there for somebody like Scal, or somebody, I don't know about Nimi. We'll see how what that transpires. And if I don't know about Nerlens Noel, and see what that transpires if he's unable to make the opening day roster or whatever. But at least in Scal's situation, he might have a fallback there to G League, have a third G, really a fourth G League assignment for him in his span of his career. And if he's willing to accept that and take that and not, use the opportunity, maybe even open up some eyes around the NBA, then so be it. Because when he was coming into the league, man, that was so weird, because he'd be a top three pick at one point, and then a year later, because of the way he was used at Kentucky, fell all the way down draft and almost into the second round. So a lot of intrigue there, and a storyline that'll be fun to monitor as we go forward.
Can I ask about the spacing the floor? Because the numbers from three don't look good.
They look horrible, to
be blunt. The free throw numbers also don't look good, right? No. 1.3 a game in the nine he played with Mexico City last year, 16%. And year prior, Westchester Knicks, only nine games, but 0.6 a game, 20%. Last year's 1.3 free throws a game, 50% from the free throw line. So spacing the floor, is this mid-range?
I think what they're looking at is because there's so few games, but at the right. NBA level, I mean, he went in his first 3 years was went from 37, 35, 36%. So, granted, that's only a span of 100 games or so, But nevertheless, I think they're more confident. Them being his camp would be more confident in his outside shooting ability that he showed at the NBA level, as opposed to what he was showing at sporadic G League appearances.
Yeah, and I would tell you too, Brennan, you watch him shoot once and you'd be like, oh, like, what is that? I mean, he has a beautiful jump shot. Like, it and it goes in. Like, we saw him late in his second season where he put up like 33 on the last game of the season or something.
And Phoenix.
Yeah, and then he busted the Kings up the next year on the last game of the season playing for Portland. Sean touched on this a little bit, but like, I think this is one of those players. We always talk about how big men take longer to develop, but also I think some personalities take longer to develop and become NBA ready. And I think for Scowl, like, his story is so unique. So first of all, he was in the earthquakes in Haiti. So his dad had gone and picked him and his brother up from school. They dropped him off at their apartment with his mom, and his dad drove away and the earthquake hit. And their apartment complex completely collapsed on Scal and his mom and his brother. Scal was pinned under a wall in like this seated position, like with his butt touching his ankles, for like 6 or 8 hours while neighbors dug him out. And it took him like, I think it was 2 or 3 months to learn how to walk again. And this is age like 13, 14. And at this, he's already like 6'4" and just nothing but arms and legs, just gangly. So there had been missionaries from the Memphis area that had come down to help out once before in Haiti. And they tried to get him to come up and let his parents let him go play basketball in the States when he was a little bit younger, when the earthquake hit and basically decimated Haiti. His parents allowed him to go with some missionaries to Memphis and basically be adopted into a family here in the United States. He played a couple of years in high school, started to develop, was one of the top high school prospects in the nation, went to Kentucky. And then I think that's where it, like, everything kind of caught up to him, that he was too nice, that like his path to get to where he was like a very arduous task to like just be alive and to survive what he'd gone through. But he was still so super nice that he kind of got ran over at Kentucky. They told him, you need to be in the draft because you're not going to play for us next year. So he went in the draft and fell to 28, where the Kings drafted him. And again, I just think he's like one of the nicest kids you're ever going to do. The smile is just golden. He's such a sweetheart of a kid, but a lot of times that doesn't translate. So I hope that he has learned that the NBA is a dog eat dog world. And if you can't stand up for yourself, you're going to get pushed around until you get pushed out. And so we'll see. I mean, at 27, it's shocking he's 27. And it seems like it wasn't that long ago that he was here in Sacramento, Sean. But he's a good kid. And I hope that he takes full advantage of the situation. The Exhibit 10, basically, unlike Chima Moneki and unlike Dellavedova, or even who is the other kid that the Kings had, was it Sam Merrill that they had last year?
I'm trying to remember. Yeah. That seems like 2 years ago, but yeah, it was.
I think it was last year. So the difference is an Exhibit 10 is below the threshold. It's about bonus money. So there's a small enough figure of bonus money that if he doesn't make the main roster, he can be allocated to the Stockton Kings. And the way that this has worked out is that the Kings are basically in transit of trading for his rights to get him to Stockton. So if he does go to the G League, if he decides to play in the G League, it would be for the Stockton Kings. It would not be for some other team. Right. So it gives him an opportunity. And like, look, he's intriguing to me still. It just depends on what he looks like when he gets out on the court. We watched him develop. We watched him get stronger each and every year and, you know, go from like this stick figure to like a full grown man. But I still think he was always like 2 years away from 2 years away. And so we'll see. I'm excited to see him. And if nothing else, catch up with him. And I was supposed to go to Haiti with him years ago because they were going to go. He was going back to Haiti for the first time when he was with the Kings, and we had everything set up. I was when I was at NBC, I think it was me and Mark Spears were going, and he decided to change agents at the last second, and the NBA didn't like what was going on because they didn't have a point of contact. So they said they wouldn't send NBA security. And for people who don't know, like Haiti is on a no-fly list for the United States. It's a danger zone that they don't recommend you go to, but we were going to have security. And when the NBA pulled their security, the trip went by the wayside, which ended up being amazing. Like Kings.com went with him. They walked down the street, like he's walking to his old home where the apartment that had collapsed. And one of the neighbors who had helped dig him out actually was walking down the street and came over and interviewed him. Like really amazing stuff. So his story's great. Whether he can make it or not is still going to be in question. But like good on him for actually, you know, showing up in Sacramento, being excited about Sacramento, and maybe he can make some noise. And there's a question that was posed like by a lot of Kings fans when they did this move. They're like, well, why not just sign Harry Giles? And I don't know, what is your guys' take on that part of this? Because Giles is another like fan favorite, 25 years old, trying to get his career back on path. And, you know, you're not choosing one over the other. The Kings still have roster spots and they still have a two-way contract that's available. But why would you guys, in your knowledge, choose a guy like Scal over a guy like Harry?
Well, I mean, I don't know that I'm not totally convinced that like they do the same things. And I think it all comes down to when I've talked to people, it's a belief in whether or not Harry can play or not, you know, that it's in his best interest, you know, that doctors would approve him, that medical staffs would sign off on him. You know, he's confident. He wants to play. He, you know, I'm talking about Harry Giles. He wants to play. Scal doesn't have any of those limitations. Yeah, he had an injury, but it's not nearly what Harry Giles has been through. So it's not like an either or. There's a lot of people rooting for Harry Giles for sure. You talk about a guy who wasn't late to basketball. I mean, this guy was, in Scal's case, he was late to basketball. Harry Giles was one of the top high school players in the country when he, you know, and people were aware of him, and suffers these injuries, and development is just so stunted, and you have this electric personality and electric energy. And so we all get it. We get why people root for Harry Giles and want to see him play. And we understand why Harry wants to put himself in the position to play and get that opportunity again. But the reality is it's not just a person who sits in a room and it is in a GM position that goes, you know, I really like this guy, let's give him a shot. It's more than that. It's a collective group of people that also have to side with their medical staff. And you're going to insure a player who most medical staffs have said no, you know, they don't have the faith that he can play. All it takes is one. And I think for Harry, him taking a lot of these workouts, he just most recently worked out with the Warriors down the street. So I'm confident he'll be able to be in a training camp environment. But I think more than anything, and he may already have this on the table, more than anything, I think teams want to see him play. And I think they're not going to so much as give him a NBA opportunity as they'll afford him a G League opportunity, because him playing a full season in the G League where the knees aren't an issue, there's no pain in there, that's like the first hurdle to get over. Can he do that? So it's nice that he's had some of these workouts, but that is more of a belief in his ability to be healthy enough to play. Whereas Scal has a lot of untapped potential, unproven ability that, you know, could he be into something? Because the concerns aren't anything to do with health and just more to do with overall talent.
Yeah, I think Sean nailed it. I mean, it's been like 13 months since we've seen Harry Giles play basketball in a game setting. So I think that it's just hard to evaluate a guy when that's been the case. And even if it wasn't that many games for Scal in G League, it's still a larger sample size of actual in-game reps for Scal than you have for Harry, or a more recent sample size, I should say. And I think that that holds a lot of weight. I don't think that there's still certainly a path for Harry, but I think that we haven't seen him for a little while, and that's kind of what it comes down to. Scal has been playing more recently, specifically played against Stockton. They got to see him up close, and I think there's value in that compared to how long it's been for Harry.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I think it's been longer than 13 months for Harry since he's been on the court. Maybe I'm wrong, but the funny thing is, like, we're talking about like Scal's story, like 14 years old when this whole thing happens in Haiti. At that point, Harry Giles is like the number one prospect in the nation. He's on Team USA for their like U15 club. He's the best player in the world at that age, at this point. And you look at Scal, who again was like 6'4" and still grew. He grew another like 6 or 8 inches after that and was still like developing. And so like super, super late to basketball versus super early to basketball. And then you look at like sort of like their maturation process. And I'll put a lot of the blame, like, look, like the Kings in that time, like in 2016, they not only drafted, so they draft Papi Giannis, they draft Scal, they draft Malachi Richardson at number 22, right? The year before, they'd brought in Willie Cauley-Stein as a rookie. But then during that season, they trade DeMarcus Cousins and bring in Buddy Hield. So they have four rookies on that roster. Then you get to the offseason, and they draft De'Aaron Fox, they draft Justin Jackson, they draft Harry Giles, they draft Frank Mason, and they talk Bogdan Bogdanovic into coming over from Europe. So now you have 9 first and second year players on one team. And to be honest, most of those guys just slip through the cracks. And it's not because Dave Yeager and his staff didn't put in time, or that, you know, the next group didn't put in time. It's that there were too many. There are too many kids for them to actually grow anything. And to, you know, when you're teaching kids how to play basketball as opposed to working with veterans and adult players and know what to do, and you're just, whether they're talented or not, or you're putting pieces together, it's a lot different. And like, how many of those guys have worked out? Like almost none of them. De'Aaron Fox and Bogdan Bogdanovic, who came over as a pro, and Buddy Hield, who was, we now know, like a 24-year-old rookie. So, you know, like these are things that actually matter. The rest of the group, Justin Jackson, Harry Giles, Scal, Malachi, Yorgos, they're all gone. None of them are in the league. And so, like, it's tough because I put a lot of the blame on just the idea and what happened there and trying to create something with a whole bunch of 19, 20, and 21-year-old dudes. It just wasn't going to work. And so, again,
Super
team just young. And like, but that's not how any of those guys have really, you know, it's not how it's worked out for any of them. Yeah. So
and that's the thing, man, there's no exact science. No one's a fortune teller. You just try to evaluate talent and put it together. And it, you know, for every Warriors team that is homegrown and has all these incredible drafts, you've got another Warriors team that was homegrown.
And none of them worked out at all.
Right. You've got a Kings team. You've got a Knicks team. You've got, you know, just everyone's trying to draft players to accumulate the best talent that they can and find an absolute star. That's always the goal. And there's no exact science. And as I like to point out, there's no analytic for chemistry and how it all, when you get a mesh of talents, how it all plays out. So, yeah, it's part of the fun.
Yeah,
it has been like 24, 25 months since Harry. My math off the top of my head.
Yeah,
sucks.
I heard that number and I was like, I think it's been longer, but I'm terrible at math, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, that, and like, I think the point though, like when we look at, you put Harry and Scal on the same team, which they were on the same team there in 2017. They're on the same team, but we're looking at like one kid who has very small amount of basketball experience versus one kid who has so much basketball experience, but 2 full-blown ACLs. and a knee surgery after that. And like, it's just, you're taking gambles on so many different types of players and so many kids from different backgrounds. And it's really, really hard for a collection of young players to survive together. And like, it's nearly impossible. Like, I bring up the Warriors, you talk about like how they get this group together and they're amazing. And then they try to replicate it while they still have this amazing group. Weissman is gone, and Moody and Kuminga, like whether they're in the rotation or not is like a big question. And Jordan Poole gone, you know, like it's really, really hard to bring along these players. And it's not just the Kings who messed up or that failed in this attempt. I mean, the Phoenix Suns have done it just as well as the Sacramento Kings. And then a lot of teams, they figure out, they get one guy that works, and then they try to build around that one guy with veteran players, which is what the Kings are doing now. It's what the Phoenix Suns did with Devin Booker.
Houston was a crazy mess last year because they were just so young. And then they might have overcompensated this offseason, in my opinion, but they realized they needed to go get some veterans. They're extremely young, and that group was as chaotic as possible.
Well, and OKC's trying it right now, and they haven't given up on it. Like, they're going to keep trying to push through with a really, really young group that's grown together. Now, whether they've done a better job of drafting the right type of players, maybe they have. Like, we don't know, but still, taking the step and becoming successful isn't easy. And so, again, and the instability of Sacramento doesn't help. The fact that half of these kids get left out because your GM gets fired and that's the guy who had some tie to you, and then your head coach gets fired and there's a different guy, you know, like that's the instability. That's how it hurts a team and a franchise. It's some of the young players get left behind, some of the young players with, you know, incredible talent that probably could have made it if they were drafted somewhere else during that exact time. So, situational stuff. Okay. Let's get to the business of basketball. I think the Scal of Beast here, like, we'll lead in with Scal and how he fits and, you know, with this conversation. But, I think last week we talked about Nemias Keita and Nerlens Noel and Alex Len and how we have this, I don't think it's a position battle as much as it is a roster battle. Outside of that, do either one of you guys really feel like there's a position battle with the Sacramento Kings that stands out that you're like, oh, I want to see what happens there? Or do we think that for the most part, we're looking at a 9 to 10 man rotation, and it's De'Aaron Fox backed up by Davion Mitchell. It's Kevin Huerter backed up by Malik Monk. It's Harrison Barnes backed up by probably Keegan Murray and maybe a little bit of Chris Duarte. Keegan Murray backed up by Sasha Vezenkov, and then the Sabonis and Trey Lyles situation at center. Is that it? Or is there actually a way that this thing works out differently? Is there a way for a guy like Chris Duarte to become more of a rotational piece? Or do we kind of know who the nine and a half man rotation is?
I think Duarte and Kessler Edwards is kind of an interesting one to me. I would assume that Duarte has the edge, but Kessler's been in the system a little bit longer. And positionally, like, how do you want to use Duarte? Is he going to be a three, or are we talking about a two? And so I think that one stands out to me a little bit. And then also I would say Lyles and Sasha. I know that, you know, there's a lot of assumption that Lyles will play a lot at the five, but I'm assuming that there will also be some opportunity for him at the four. But what does that mean for Sasha? I think Sasha's pretty good. I'm pretty big on Sasha. I think he's going to fit well offensively within the system. We'll have to see what he looks like defensively, but what do those minutes look like? And because, you know, Sasha probably came over here, I would assume, with some guarantee that there's an X amount of minutes on the table for him. So what does that mean for Lyles? Is he fully at the five, or how much is he playing at the four? So those are the two that probably stand out to me.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree there. It'll be curious to see if Chris Duarte plays a different but similar role. And I mean different because he brings different attributes to the game than someone like Terrence Davis does. But Terrence had a way to crack the lineup without being able to play every day. And if he's coming in and offering something different, I think that would be the one to monitor and see if there's anything there. But I think you kind of nailed it. I think that's why there's not really a lot of intrigue going into this camp outside of maybe, you know, who makes the roster and who makes the most of their opportunity. And You know, we're hyper focusing on a lot of players who are towards the end of the roster, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But I think the benefit, if you're a Kings fan, and maybe the boring part for us as media members who cover the team, is that this team is pretty well stacked. So you already know who's what for the most part and what role that they play. And Mike Brown will and his staff will certainly double down on the whole, you know, people knowing their role and being able to contribute. I think the biggest question mark is how does Sasha Vezenkov fit in that? Where does he come in and make the most headway in terms of trying to translate to the NBA game? And that'll be the biggest question mark. And hopefully you see rather early that, you know, if you're a Kings fan or you're in that organization, that you have that kind of that answer very quickly. And the answer is yes, that he can definitely fit into the NBA game and it translates well. Because I think the worst thing would be getting into December and see a very inconsistent player. So I think it'd be interesting to see, you know, for a guy who has a bit of physicality to him, who I don't want to call him a poor defender, but I don't think that he's going to be known for his defense, but he is a physical type of player. It'll be interesting to see if he can even take minutes at the three at all at any point with this positionless basketball. So, I think that's just to me what leaps off the page in terms of the most interesting part of training camp going in there. It's all centered on Sasha.
Yeah, that's interesting because, I mean, we have this question. Do the guards bleed into the small forward position or do the bigs bleed into the small forward position? I'm not sure that Sasha can play the three. I don't know that I've even heard that the Kings might try that. Like it's too early for that, right?
And what I mean by that is just, you know, positionless basketball, as you mentioned. I mean, you're going to have a lot of times where you go smaller, right? And so he does play with a physicality and likes to get into the paint, at least what you see on tape for Euroball. And there could be a belief that depending upon how you situate your lineup that maybe that happens. I don't think I would necessarily agree with it, but I think training camp is where all that tinkering kind of comes to light and you kind of figure it out. So make the most of it at that point. But that I think too, is if things go really, really well for him at the four position and he can fit in very, very nicely. If he has a little bit of a speed to his game to where he can keep up, you know, it might be something worth looking at, but that's all training camp stuff. You know, you tinker and you figure it out and find what lineups work best with each other.
Yeah. And I think for me, he's a really smart basketball player. So I'm worried about him like on an island caught in space against somebody for sure. Like that's going to be an issue. Like, but I also think it's an issue for Domantas Sabonis. And I think it's an issue for, I don't know, Trey Lyles. And it's an issue for half of the guards on this team that if they're on an island, they're in trouble. And so for me, it's about team defense and whether Sasha can fit into the team defensive concepts. And I think he can. Like, I don't think he's going to have such an issue. Like, I want to see if he's switchable. Can he play the 3-4 interchangeable on the defensive end? Can he play alongside a Keegan Murray and play alongside him for major minutes? And then also, I think that's kind of where Chris Duarte fits in. Duarte is a really good defender. Like there was a time 2 years ago in his rookie season where like you can almost say elite defender. Like his metrics are crazy. And so I wonder if that's how you fix the front line of Sasha Vezenkov and Trey Lyles off the bench, is you put in a really good defender alongside them, whether it's at the two or the three, and you try to shore yourself up that way. I think it's going to be interesting. Like, I don't know, again, how many minutes Davion Mitchell will play. He's going to be in a dogfight for minutes, and I don't think that's a great thing for him, because, you know, you have another guy like Duarte who has very similar attributes, except for he's 6'6", and he can play the two and the three, and he can even play a little one. So you can go with a big guard lineup, and I like the idea of Malik Monk at the point guard or running an offense similar to what De'Aaron Fox runs with the starters with the second unit, but alongside a big guard in Chris Duarte. That doesn't like mean that I think that Davion Mitchell's not going to play at all, but I certainly think that they're going to tinker here, and there's all kinds of ways that Mike Brown can piece this thing together. certainly versatility is something that positional roster flexibility, all that stuff. I think it's way bigger this year than it has been in past years.
Yeah. Can I translate a King's Pulse segment over here?
Yeah.
Typically at the end of shows, I wasn't asking you, Sean.
No, I'm kidding.
Shut up.
At the end of shows, I like to do an overtime segment that is more focused on us, I guess, or typically I say non-basketball. We're still keeping basketball a little bit, but it's more personal. So my question, as I wear my Isaiah Thomas t-shirt.
Stand up. Show it off.
Slam. It is a gorgeous
Work
Slam
it.
Magazine cover. Oh, yeah. You want me to spin?
Today, okay. I'm wearing a Legend of Zelda.
Ooh, okay.
Legend of Zelda t-shirt.
That's retro. That's
yeah, retro. You like that? Go for it, Brennan.
So my question is, what are the team or teams that made you fall in love with basketball? If you love basketball, I guess. I would
Well, this is a hard pivot, isn't it?
It is. I will start to give you guys time to think. We Believe Warriors is the easy one for me. That was the one that had me hooked. I'm aging myself, right? That's definitely the one that had me hooked. I remember watching, obviously beating Dirk and the Warriors was crazy. My dad's a huge Warriors fan. My dad's very passionate fan, also yelling at the TV, and the Warriors were dog shit forever. And finally, that was a fun year that he could finally enjoy. And I remember the dunk on AK-47 in the second round from Baron Davis. And, he lifts up the shirt, gets the tech, but watching SportsCenter top 10 the next day, he was 5 out of 10, all different angles. And that stood out to me. And then,
do you remember who he dunked on?
I said AK-47, Kirilenko, okay, right?
Sure. Yeah. Just making sure.
Deron Williams cooked them in that series, but yeah. And then the one that was closer, like later,
by the way, I thought Deron Williams would have been a better player than Chris Paul. And
yeah, that was a big debate. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a who's the top guy debate. The other one for me is definitely the Isaiah Thomas Celtics, the year that he was almost MVP and then got moved for Kyrie afterwards, playing not long after his sister passed. And crazy. I think it was game 6 against Washington. He crossed Markieff Morris, hit this and one. They had been jawing back and forth the whole series, fouled them out, iced the game. That one definitely was near and dear to home for me.
Okay. Let's see. I've said this before, and people like taking whatever. I don't care. When I was growing up, on TV, it was only Celtics Lakers almost every single weekend. Like if you wanted to watch NBA basketball, it was Celtics Lakers. And like I grew up loving watching Magic Johnson play. Magic was just incredible, and their team was so good, like from top to bottom. And when the Kings moved here in 1985. I was young, but that's kind of when you're like, okay, I'll take up the hometown team. That's fine. And they became like my team as when I was young. And then we also like Fred Anderson was the PA announcer in the arena at Arco 1 and Arco 2 until they had like a small window where they had a couple of people fill in, but before Scott Moak. And Fred was a deacon at my church, and I graduated from high school with his daughter, and I was friends with his daughter. We spent, we went to church together and stuff. So I knew the Anderson. So when we went to a game or two when I was young, we would walk down and to the scorer's table, like in pregame, and say hi to Fred. And so I became like, this was, it's your hometown team. I remember working at Big A's Drive-In in Grass Valley when I was young, and I would turn the games on and listen on 1140 to Gary Gerald while I cleaned the restaurant and stuff. And then when I was in high school, or maybe before I was in high school, but I had we would go to high school football games in Nevada Union. It was weird. Michael Jackson, the old Kings point guard, and
Michael Jackson?
Yeah, it wasn't the Michael Jackson, but...
I would assume, yeah.
Yeah, and Harold Presley came up for a Friday night football game because the Kings would do that. They would send players up to go sort of rep, and so you got to see him, and you're like, okay, this is cool. So, yeah, it was like Kings-based because I grew up here, But yeah, that's sort of where I, even though they were bad, you know, you had the crazy draft where they had four first round picks. And so everyone's like enthralled by what's happening. You had, even before that, you had Danny Ainge, and then you had players that were like super likable for normal people like Spud Webb. And so, yeah, it was mostly Kings related when I was young.
Yeah, I mean, mine's not going to be that, I mean, all that unpredictable. I mean, it's Michael Jordan. It's Michael Jordan, the way the Bulls were. I mean, it's all 90s for me. And by virtue of me working around celebrity golf tournaments a lot and seeing some of, you know, Jordan and Barkley and Barkley's infectious personality, I mean, he was doing celebrity golf tournaments while he was a player, both him and Jordan both. And being around those guys quite a few times out of the year in a different environment that wasn't the NBA drew me to the NBA. And obviously Barkley's personality, think, you know, Grant Hill, Mitch Richmond, were probably in that next category. And then, you know, shout out Sean Kemp, man. I used to seek out Sean Kemp highlights and video. And the first time I ever saw him play in a game live, unfortunately he was no longer, well, no, I did see him as a Sonic, but I only saw him as a Sonic once, but he was bigger. And then the next time I saw Sean Kemp, he was in Cleveland, I believe. And he was really bigger and not the Sean Kemp that was flying through the air like he once did. So, but he was so much fun to watch. Grant Hill became, you know, from Duke and having a little bit of a connection to the university at that point, kind of the, I think the most impactful, to where I thought he was going to be otherworldly talent, and we would be speaking of him like we do Michael Jordan. So yeah, those were that's what did it.
Yeah, I dug watching Jordan, you know, all the way through the 90s. But I also, like, I love Dennis Rodman, and yep, when he was with the Bad Boys, and you know, like, there was an All-Star game early in his career where he blocked a shot, and I swear his armpit was at the rim, and he sent it like 15 rows deep into the stands, just like having a good time. And it was like, oh my gosh, like watching someone who was like 6'7" who could do something like that. It was pretty crazy.
Have you guys seen the clips of Anthony Edwards and Jordan side by side? Not to say their games are the exact same, but these specific like handful of plays, it's very interesting to me. Like, everybody awes about Jordan's athleticism, right? And I didn't really get to witness this in the same way. And like, it has had me thinking, is like Ant a fair comparison for just athleticism, or is there just no comparison?
No, I don't think there is. Like, even like Vince Carter was one of the greatest like athletes that we've seen after that. And Vince Carter had like vertical pop, but not like Jordan could hang in the air. I mean, just like would float, and you're like, this is amazing to watch. So for me, like, I still haven't seen anyone who remotely comes close to Jordan. And it, like, part of the moxie, I guess the only one that remotely close is Kobe, but still, I like, there was a level that Jordan had that I think was different.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sean looks like he's deep in thought.
Yeah. I got distracted by an email. I apologize, but yeah. There was a, yeah, I mean, I didn't expect to have that conversation, but those are fun stories. I mean, for Kings fans, seeing Mitch Richmond and Michael Jordan, I mean, it was Michael Jordan, and then right below him was Mitch Richmond. So,
and watching them go at it.
Oh, it's incredible.
Oh, yeah. Totally, totally incredible. Yeah. Definitely. Good question. Good question. Let's see. Finish this thing up. Brendan, you had an article last week on the Kings Herald with Keon Ellis. You had an interview with Keon Ellis. People should go in and check it out. Do you think Keon Ellis fits in Sacramento this year, or is he going to have to wait another year?
I think he's going to probably spend a decent amount of time in Stockton, but I don't think that's a bad thing. He developed his playmaking, I think, a lot last year. He actually said it was something that Nate Oates at Alabama emphasized a lot, one-handed live dribble passes. But, you know, coming out of college, I think a thing that was talked about a lot is he only had 7 more assists than turnovers, 59 to 52 in his senior year. Last year at Stockton, 128 assists to 66 turnovers. Very clear progress there. Got to talk to him a little bit about, I sort of emphasized what he learned from specific coaches, and that was primarily Bobby Jackson, Mike Brown, and then Lindsey Harding, who he has a really good relationship. When he would come up to Sacramento, that was kind of the coach that was assigned to him. And he's very much looking forward to playing under Lindsey during his time in Stockton this year. But I think he's going to get a shot. You know, they need the defense. I think he's getting more and more accustomed to the offense. I thought we saw a lot of progress throughout really all of his game during that last summer league. I think he did a pretty good job of making an impact, and seems like a guy, if he can piece together the offense, become, you know, the sharp, sharp shooter that he wants to be and still make his impact defensively, that there's a lot of value there. And the one other thing I'd add is that he talked about there's a handful of guys that have been in the gym. I might have mentioned this last episode too. I guess Dutch is the one that's kind of correlating all this. But I think previously that De'Aaron Fox, Keegan Murray, and Davion Mitchell were part of this group as well. But since they've kind of, you know, gone on to other things, Keegan Team USA, De'Aaron's gone overseas, Davion's hopped around a little bit. He went overseas, he went to Baylor and has been at other places. I think I saw him at like Rico Hines runs recently. But he mentioned that he's been working out a lot with Kessler Edwards, Colby Jones, Jalen Slauson, and Jordan Ford here in Sacramento Stockton. So I thought that was pretty interesting. It's nice to see, you know, a group that is already known as a close-knit group still spending time together here in the offseason.
Oh, that's good stuff. I think, you know, again, he's up against it, but I do like when Monty was in Houston, they did this. They created proper G League players. In my mind, they tried to create 3-and-D guys. They created power forward centers, like the aggressive, like Tariq Black and Montrezl Harrell. You look at Daniel House, and like there's a bunch of players that came through their G League system that aren't going to be stars, but they can be stars in their roles. And I think it's a good way to handle the G League. And so hopefully that's something we see continue. And I think he's one of those guys that like has the potential to fit in and to be a player at some point. We'll just have to see if he's going to get that opportunity in Sacramento or if it'll have to be elsewhere, just with the way that the roster is so stacked at this point. And so deep at that position specifically.
And it'll be interesting to see how they build out the Stockton roster.
Yeah, I totally agree. And Miss Rana Dive, of course, is building out the Stockton roster. Let's see, before we get out of here, I did write on Malik Monk and the options that the Kings have, to retain him. And, I don't know, like, I don't think people should be, I think a lot of people were super concerned about how you're going to retain Malik Monk after this season, but the Kings can go up to like a 4-year, I think I have it, 4-year 80. Ooh, I'm trying to remember what it was. 4-year, $78 million, something like that. If they want to, a starting salary over $17 million next season, because he fits into the early bird rights, but a different way that than Trey Lyles or that Rashawn Holmes did, and so they can go much higher with his salary than they could have with those guys. And so, like, if Malik Monk wants to stick in Sacramento, there's definitely a lane for which that can happen. And I wouldn't be shocked to see him like stick around on a 4-year, like long-term deal that equates to right around what Harrison Barnes money means to the Kings roster, right around the 12-13%.
I am not worried about Malik Monk going anywhere. I haven't seen some of the things that obviously, chatter and banter and speculation that he might leave that maybe you have, but that seems very premature and not really that realistic, to be honest. So,
well, I just think that
it on a number though, like he's closing games. He was extremely, extremely important in that Golden State series. Yeah. Like Malcolm Brogdon, sixth man of the year. I think he's on a 245, you know, I could see somebody throwing Malik a bigger number than that, but not so much larger than the 480 or near. What was it? 470 what, James?
I think it's 478.
Yeah, so I don't think somebody's totally outpricing him there.
Yeah, and the bird rights are everything, right? I mean, that's
well, he has early bird. He doesn't have standard
early bird. Right.
Yeah, because he didn't sign the 3-year deal, which I think
that's still a leg up on competition, in my opinion.
It's huge. Yeah, because they can pay him way more than the MLE. Like,
right. And they may not need to.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to see how it plays out. But I definitely think it's one of those things where people are like, well, how are they going to bring him back? There's no way he's going to sign for, you know, for the mid-level exception next year, which is, you know, $12 million. And the math is way different. So if you look at it and you break it down, the early bird rights, he can get 175% of his current salary. His current salary is like 9.9 million. So he can get up to like 17 million. And that's, to me, that's probably around with the range he's going to make in his next contract, maybe a little bit less. There's always potential for it to be more, but I don't know that you're going to see bigger than basically what amounts to like a 4-year, $80 million deal.
Right.
And so I think the Kings will be in the ballpark, and it's whether or not they're all moving forward on the, in the same way. And I think that they probably will be. And again, Malik Monk's 25 years old. And I think that's one of the interesting things about this team. He's the one guy that really isn't locked up beyond this coming season. But the rest of them are all like, if it works, you got a core together for a long time. So anyway, all right, let's hit this real quick. Final thoughts, Sean, do you have any final thoughts?
Only that, I enjoyed, going to Soul Bloom, last weekend. And I really enjoyed a text that I got from our buddy Brendan Nunez right there about possibly going. I'll leave that part
yeah, we'll leave private. That out.
Brennan, were you able to, you weren't able to go?
No,
right?
No, I didn't get to catch anything. That's a shame. Thought about it, didn't end up working out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looked like a good time. Who was your I don't think we should talk. Not really. Kind
okay,
of.
Okay. Just making sure. Kind of.
Okay. Yeah. Who were some of your favorite people there?
Oh, I was there to see Jesse Reyes and Jesse Reyes only. That Kehlani I've seen before. She's fantastic. But I stayed on that stage, saw Chloe Bailey, saw Jesse Reyes, and then saw, I was only there for the Sunday. Wanted to go Saturday, but Sunday had more of the draw to me. So fortunately, I've seen Pink Sweats and Teyana Taylor before, so I was able to kind of avoid the madness of that stage and stay over on the other one and just go Chloe Bailey, Jesse Reyes, who was my draw, and stick around and watch Kehlani close it out. It was a lot of fun. Hope people had fun. Kehlani, a lot of people passing out though. You need to stay hydrated.
Really?
Yeah, stay hydrated. People, yeah. There's a lot of you know, you go to a festival, especially when it gets darker, and people will show their flashlights on their phone, and everyone around someone who's dropped, you know, and to get paramedics over there to help them. There was a lot of the flashing lights, and it wasn't for the concert reasons. It was to help people who kind of passed out. So just people need to remember to stay hydrated. It wasn't even that hot, but it, because you had that marine layer coming in with the storm and all that stuff, but
yeah, muggy,
muggy, muggy,
muggy. I know my guys, D'Lo and Casey, were there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Sean and
I didn't get to see them. I should have reached out. I think they were gone by the time I got there.
Yeah. We've got, we'll all be at the Republic game tomorrow night. That should be intriguing. Me and D'Lo and Casey will be at the game as well. It's the big one. It's what, the 10-year anniversary? Is that what it is?
It is. Yeah, the first few matches were played at Hughes Stadium. But yeah, I went to an event with the Republic where two of the players trained with a Special Olympics team. It's unified with the club, so that, you know, they're during one of their matches in October or something like that. But I know the Special Olympics team will play. And so it was just fun to see these kids and adults who were part of the Special Olympics here with these athletes. And it was, you just see their faces light up, and to see, it was Luther Archimed and Russell Cicerone who were out there. And it was a lot of fun. And I was talking to one of their people, and they're like, yeah, this thing's almost sold out, which is pretty remarkable when you think about it, because you know, granted, there's been a lot of excitement in the recent news that, you know, Belinda Stronach could be a possible big whale investor helping them maybe push them over the line here for an MLS bid again. But the fan base has been through so much. I mean, you talk about the hope of having this soccer team that means what it means for USL and Sacramento, but the prospect of luring MLS at the time was such a big, weighty thing that people wanted. And that was a way to show community support and this you know, the community coming out and supporting that club. So to see that and what they've been through 10 years later has been a lot. There's been a lot of drama there. And if you can, it doesn't even have to sell out for that thing to be a success. But if it does, that says a lot.
Yeah, close to what is over 22,000.
20,000, yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, that's a lot. It's a lot of people.
And they like that first game. I don't want to put a damper on it. They lost that first game, so it was almost probably for the better because I think it really sprung them forward. They won the championship their first year.
That's right. That's right. It's been so long. Yeah. All right, Brandon, you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, I might have to look at some of those tickets. I know you said it's almost sold out, but I'm gonna take a peek at that. I'm excited that football is here. I'm definitely leaning into it more this year. I've been, Madden just came out. I'm playing a lot of Madden. I think I'm decent. Not going to lie. yeah, I'm having fun with football. I think, Sam Darnold over Trey Lance is an understandable decision, but you know, it's Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle and all those guys, but I'm over it, you know, whatever. Spent all those picks to get that guy just for whatever. It is what it is. I think it's the right decision. You got to know when to cut ties. And I'm excited football's here, though. 9 years later today, and I'm ready for the regular season to get started. Brock Purdy is it, and that is all that matters.
I'm excited about fantasy football. We got fantasy football coming up. Played forever. It's good stuff. Let's see. Outside of that, I don't think I really have much. I went and saw Rent.
Peering out the window.
I saw Rent. Last night I went to the music theater, which is a blast. Like that's a great venue to go see a Broadway play. I don't think I have much else. So it's been a long week.
My comedy show at the Hard Rock was okay, by the way. I don't know if we talked about
it. You saw Ali Wong? No, who'd you see?
No, I don't know, some Italian guy. I got given the tickets. It was like,
oh, random. You saw Sebastian Maniscalco. Yes, or yes, how did thank Manis, you. Yeah, okay. Somewhere, did I say it right? Yeah. Maniscalco.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Yeah, he was decent. And the venue was cool.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he drove all the way out there.
Yeah. Oh, very middle of nowhere. Yeah, I don't know why every casino is just
It's not that.
Well, no, but like there's no other. You're driving down the freeway and there's nothing else. And you're it's got to be that big ass building. And sure enough.
And yet you start seeing it from a ways away. You see the bright lights out in the distance where it's lighting up the fields. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's weird, but it's not that far. Like it really isn't.
It's a good trek. It is.
Well, you don't live in Sacramento. you live in Nevada.
I live in Nevada County, but not Nevada. But yeah, I do live up the hill a little bit. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this edition of the King's Beat podcast. We'll be back next week. Make sure to, if you're still watching here on YouTube, give us a thumbs up, rating and review, all that stuff. Subscribe to the channel, jump on board with the King's Beat, go to thekingsbeat.com, become a premium subscriber. So you get invited to things like the happy hour, which should be coming up pretty soon. We should have one because I have my month of September is a disaster. It's going to be really difficult to do anything building up to the draft. I mean, building up to the start of training camp and everything else. So that's going to do it for this edition of the King's Beat podcast. So for Box 40s, Sean Cunningham and Brendan Nunes from the King's Pulse podcast. I am James Hamm, Kings Insider for ESPN 1320 and the King's Beat. See you very soon.